welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And today we're going to do a bit of a rundown of all the tournaments we've been to recently, but haven't had the chance to talk about. So we'll be talking about such high-profile events as the Scottish Nationals, the British Championship, English Open, and of course, the tournament we've just gotten back from, which was the International Teams Tournament that's formerly known as World Open War.
So first, Johnny, how are the Scottish Nationals?
Pretty good. I've got to say, it was a very good tournament. I would recommend, if you have the ability to get there, I would recommend the Scottish Nationals as a tournament because it was a well-run event. The venue was very good. Nightly gaming in Bathgate. I'd recommend, to be honest, if you're in the area, get yourself down there. It's a bit of a sort of a board games cafe type feel. So much like Firestorm Games in Cardiff, they've got their own little cafe set up in there. So there's coffee whenever you want it, which is always ideal for a bolt action tournament. And they've got sort of a big open space upstairs where they can set up loads of tables. And so it was a brilliant weekend, played in the best spirits by a lot of sort of very competitive players because it was part of sort of the wider British Championship that was set up this year.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just British players who played in it, was it?
No, we had a few from overseas. The one that I played was Michael, one of the Danish players who also joined us at World Open War, mm-hmm. Weekend just gone. And so the fact that we had these players willing to travel overseas, literally, because I presume they came over the North Sea rather than via Paris.
I'd imagine, yeah.
Yeah, so the fact that they're willing to make that journey shows that it is a tournament that consistently delivers, and they've decided this is the one for them. I think it also helps that the Scots put on a good weekend, regardless of how the games go.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So it was a two-day event, five games. What was the pack, Johnny? What restrictions were in place?
So it was two generic reinforced platoons, or you could take a single generic tank platoon. A lot of players did decide to go that route. One of the things that did happen this year, which I know is one of your pet peeves, was the Free Indian squad was allowed for the Brits alongside the Free Observer. And okay. So, of course, because of that, we saw a lot of Brits.
I imagine you're going to see British armoured platoons because you can add that Free Indian squad. So you've got your three infantry squads you can take in an armoured platoon, throw in the Indian squad. That's four infantry on top of the up to five armoured vehicles you can take.
Absolutely, yeah. Because obviously, as you say, the weakness of your armoured platoon, single generic armoured platoon, you only get three infantry choices, which makes it difficult to play key positions. But if you let people take those three Indians, they've gained a fourth infantry squad to take objectives. You suddenly have lost that negative of having a tank platoon. So there were all of the competitive players basically took Stuarts, Gurkhas, Free Indians. That was sort of your go-to top five list.
So as well as the British with the Gurkhas and the Stuarts and so on, what other nations were there and what the builds are like for them?
Yeah, I did face a Japanese list, which is sort of a very competitive nation that we don't see enough of. So I was quite glad to see that. Mm-hmm. But I did play a lot of Brits. I think I played Brits nearly every game apart from that one Japanese game.
Okay.
There was one interesting British list where Michael from Denmark, he had brought two forward observers and he was running lots of sort of recce jeeps. So it was a British list, but it was very different to all the other British lists I faced that weekend.
Okay, cool.
And on the pack, the one thing I would recommend for them next year is to put their pack in a PDF. The pack was basically the description on the website and the Facebook page. But I know a lot of players, especially these competitive players, like to download, have it either on their iPad or print it out so that they've got it on hand during the tournament. Because especially if you're changing little things like how objectives are captured or this one, they'd very nicely pre-published the missions and sort of the unique parts of the mission. But again, it wasn't in a PDF, which just meant that players had to sort of collate that information themselves if they wanted it on hand during the tournament or before the tournament.
So were the missions released before the list deadline?
Yeah, the missions were released. I think they were actually released. Yeah, the missions were released sort of around the time that the original pack came out. And interestingly, each mission had a different secondary objective. And so the first mission, the secondary objective was to kill the enemy HQ. And then it was a classic secondary objective in the second mission. Then it was get one of your units into their deployment zone. And then the last two games were traditional secondary, kill the HQ again, which actually I thought was a nice touch, especially if you sort of paired it with the right mission. Something like meet and engagement, but you have to get a unit into their deployment zone, is an interesting touch because those armies who would normally just hide during meet and engagement,
if
they want that secondary, that's not an option anymore.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so that worked well. The thing that didn't work so well with that is obviously if you've got a tank platoon, the HQ is a tank.
Yeah.
And so that makes it slightly more difficult, especially if I haven't brought a tank platoon, I'm facing a tank platoon, and the secondary is to kill that tank. As soon as I lose my anti-tank assets, I can't then complete the secondary. So even if I can still win the game quite strongly, because that's all they've got left, it's a double-edged sword, I would say.
Okay. And then over the course of the weekend, Johnny, how did you get on?
Pretty well, I think. I can't remember.
You came second.
Yeah, I did come second. Let me start again then. So I came second, which was not bad at all. Oh, thank you, Phil.
No, not bad at all, no.
So I won the first four games. I won, including the game against Alistair, who's one of the Scottish WTC and World Open War players, captains of the team for both them events, I think. And in that game, he had that tank platoon crazy. I knew that I was going to struggle against it. So that was one of the games where I stacked the table in key positions and then won the roll off. And I felt a little bit bad for him, but at the same time, it was one of those situations where sort of you risk big, you win big.
Yeah, knees must.
Exactly, yeah. And then my final game against Rich, who we know from all of his sort of tournament outings. It was meeting engagement, I think, and he just sort of pipped me to the post with that one.
So overall second for the Scottish Nationals, and this obviously was the final installment of the British Championship. So earlier on this year, we had the Welsh Nationals in May, we had the English Nationals in August, and then finally Scottish Nationals in September. How did you do overall with regards to the British Championship?
Yeah, so overall the British Championship, we had Rich and Russell on 55 points, top place, and then I came in third after those two. So they ended up actually having to share the trophy.
Okay.
But as I say, I came in third on that one. We had some big names going into that one who were slightly ahead of me, I think. Gary Morgan, Paul Wickens, those types of players.
Yeah. Fantastic, Johnny. Well done.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And huge congratulations to Rich and Russell, who came joint first and won the British Championship overall after a strong performance at the Welsh, English and Scottish Nationals. Such a close performance that they actually couldn't split them. I think when they met, they each won one and they drew the third match between them. So it really was close at the top.
Fantastic. And the British Championship, this is very much not just a one-off for this year. It is something that's going to continue for next year. The Welsh Nationals, the dates have been announced. It's the first weekend in May, the May bank holiday weekend. And then the English Nationals and the Scottish Nationals will follow later on next year.
Look forward to seeing you there.
Likewise yourself, Johnny.
But anyway, Phil, more recently, we had the English Open over at Selwig War Games Show, which happens every year over at Lee Valley Athletic Centre. This year I was TOing and you were playing in the tournament, whereas last year you just helped TO. How was it this year being a player rather than a TO? And what did you think of the format this year, Phil?
So slightly different from last year in terms of the way we structured it. So day one was infantry only, and it was theatre selectors. Day two was armour platoons, using the generic armour platoon selector. So last year we did five games over the weekend, theatre selectors. This year we mixed it up, so a bit of a tank war on day two. The results from day one and day two combined led to the overall winner. And it was a 50-50 split between Axis and Allies, so there were no blue on blues. So I really enjoyed the format. I took a Japanese platoon on both days, which is slightly controversial with regards to an armored platoon. So my list for day one was the Burma selector. It was entirely infantry. The only vehicle I had was a Kurigani for my flamethrower. I played the three games on the Saturday. I won all my games. We had major and minor victories and secondaries going on. So I think I was third overall at the end of day one. Paul Wickens was at the top, and then Martin Knowles and I were joint second on points, but in terms of dice, Martin pipped me going into day two.
So where did you finish overall then, Phil?
Not first, second, or third. So I decided to take a Japanese armored platoon on day two, and this was based on a battle in the Philippines, late war, where they fielded four Horos in one go. So my armored platoon was a Shinhoto, four Horos, a bunch of veterans, and then the usual smattering of suicide anti-tank guys and flamethrower and a Kurigani and so on. So the theory behind the list was that if the Horos hit, because they're doing D6 pins, I was going to be able to pin out vehicles rather than necessarily going for the heavy or super heavy anti-tank option, which, to be fair, isn't really available for the Japanese. So that was the theory.
It's a good plan.
It was a good plan on paper. Turns out in reality, it wasn't the greatest plan ever. So we played sectors for mission one on day two. And that obviously has prep bombardment, and I was playing a Canadian list, so they got the free artillery observer. So through a combination of prep bombardment and the artillery observer, by the end of turn two, I had a lot of pins flying around. I'd kept some of the Horos in reserve because I didn't want them to get blown up being open topped on prep bombardment. But even so, so my first game didn't go particularly well. Congratulations to Mike Parker on that one. That said, going into the final game, Paul Wickens had won very convincingly in his game on day two. So nobody could catch Paul. Going into the final game on the Sunday, it was potentially between myself, Michael Smith, and Martin Knowles, all of whom could finish second. So there was a lot to play for. So I played Martin in that game. Martin had a really cool US tank platoon, which was based on Bastogne. So he had four Hellcats and the M16, the one with the four HMGs. And then he had paratroopers in support. So we had a fantastic game, and it went right down to the wire. I narrowly lost that, so I got a minor loss, which meant I was pips at the post, so I wasn't finishing first, second, or third. I think I finished fifth overall, but I absolutely loved playing Japanese tank platoon despite the results, and obviously really pleased how I did on the Saturday with the infantry.
Yeah, you got a good result, to be fair. I think you were third axis overall, which is not a bad place to end.
Yeah, I think, so I went from being, very, very strong performance on the Saturday to one of the worst performers on the Sunday, but still managed to finish, fourth or fifth. So, yeah, happy with that.
Yeah, and ultimately, the English Open is always more aimed at sort of your thematic play, and I think it was very successful in that regard. I think we saw a lot of very thematic armies. I think next year we'll probably have to introduce a sort of Best in Faction award, because we did see a couple of minors, but not enough for my liking, I don't think.
No, we had a fishy French list. So we had the Japanese, but yeah, there was a lot of Soviets and Germans and so on, which, you kind of expect if you're playing tank wars, you're going to look at the Axis and go, do you know what? I'm going to take a German tank platoon or I'm going to take a Soviet platoon. What was fantastic was the number of players who came who had never played in an event or a tournament before, or maybe only played like a one-day event at their local club. So we had a lot of new people joining us, which was brilliant. It was really good to see that.
Yeah, and that is, I only really play at tournaments these days because of how busy I am. I don't get much time to get down the club, and I have to recommend tournaments for people who are in a similar sort of situation, because you put aside one weekend, you get five good games in, and then that for me is as good as sort of going down the club every week. But shall we talk about our most recent tournament we've just been to, the most exciting potentially as well?
Absolutely. Not even 24 hours ago.
Not even, at time of recording.
Yeah.
I got home about 23 hours ago.
I was still somewhere on the M25 24 hours ago.
Yeah. I was going to say mopping your tears, but I don't want to give any spoilers away just yet.
I wasn't crying. I was grinning, to be fair.
Yeah, I had a brilliant time as well. So, of course, we are talking about World Open War, the international teams tournament that just took place in Southend. I imagine if you are a Bolt Action player with an internet connection, you are aware of this, because Warlord Games have been sort of promoting this tournament, and it's one that we had Warlord Games staff and a lot of support at the tournament. But first, before we talk about that, over to our reporters in the field, who are joined by a very special guest.
Thanks, Johnny. So I'm delighted to say we are joined tonight by Marcus Vine, tournament coordinator from Warlord Games.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, gents. Pleasure to be here. Seems like only last weekend we were all hanging out together in Southend.
Quite possibly because it was.
Indeed.
So this part of the show, we're going to talk about WoW, so the World Open War Tournament, which was held this weekend just gone in Southend. And Marcus, this was something that Warlord Games has jumped on. Do you want to just talk through for the listeners why Warlord decided to get so heavily involved in this tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. So it comes from a few places. The first thing is that Warlord and myself personally actually have quite a bit of history with SSWG, the club in Southend that put the event on, and Russ, the organizer. He was actually the person that organized the first Three Good Men, which was the first tournament we ever sent the Warlord Games tournament team to before COVID. So I've only ever had great experiences with Russ as a TO, as an organizer. I know how good their clubhouse is. I know how lovely of a venue and how good of an atmosphere it has. We were actually at the Grand Tournament this year in Nottingham, and we were having a few drinks after the games on the Saturday. And Russ kind of grabbed me and said, "Hey, I've got this tournament I'm putting together. It's an international, it's a team event, it's got people coming from all over the world. I really want Warlord to be involved." And obviously we support sort of all sorts of events and tournaments all over the world. But Russ kind of came to me and said, "Hey, you know, we'd really like Warlord to be sort of extra involved. We'd like to put this on as a big thing." And I saw kind of what he was pitching and the idea. And I thought, actually, you know what? We've partnered with BHGS to put the GT back on in Nottingham at BritCon every year. And this is a really great opportunity to partner with SSWG to put an international team event on. And that was really something that I was very keen to have, was a marquee team event that is Warlord official is not exactly the right term, but it was presented by us in association with SSWG, in the same way that the GT is presented by us in association with the BHGS. So there was this just, I knew he'd do an amazing job. I knew he'd attract some really top players. I knew the venue was great. I knew the people involved were great. And I just thought, you know what? This is the one. It's kind of fallen into our laps unexpectedly. Let's make the most of this. Let's push it.
Yeah, the Three Good Men tournament has been on my tournament calendar every year for some time now. And I think I have played the Warlord team before, which is always a nice round.
You probably spanked us, mate.
That's why it's usually a nice round. It's like getting a bye. I can totally understand why, having been to that and experienced it, it is sort of an easy one to endorse because you know sort of what you're going to get from it. Do you have any specific highlights from this weekend?
Oh, so many, to be honest. I mean, the first one has to be actually, weirdly, walking into the clubhouse and seeing where they'd extended it to that back room. You know, it was all still a little bit of work in progress, but that tunnel of flags they'd set up with national flags for all of the countries taking part. And you walk down that and you suddenly think, wow, you know, this is for real. They've really gone all out. And that was just absolutely amazing to see, really push that atmosphere. I think other highlights, USA Swans nearly knocking Denmark out of the championship group. Mm-hmm. You know, they came over here with some really weird lists, some really off meta lists, and people didn't rate them necessarily. People were like, "Oh, what are they doing? These lists don't make sense." And then you get sort of game three on the Saturday, and it's looking like they might genuinely knock Denmark out of their group and go through to the championship round. And I think that would have been an amazing story. But even as was, they were just the loveliest dudes. Just, you know, they'd come such a long way. And they brought some good armies, some armies that turned out to be really unexpectedly strong. Yeah. But crucially, they brought a really good attitude, a really good sense of kind of sportsmanship and fun to the event. And they played hard, but they played the right way. I think my other big highlight probably has to be actually Graham Thompson from Scotland getting a win of Achilles from Spain.
Yeah.
And not so much the game itself, because I didn't get to watch too much of that game, but honestly, just seeing how much Graham was made up to have beaten, by consensus, you know, a top three player in the world any day of the week and the best player in the world most days. Although I suspect Bo might have something to say about that now. It was really lovely to see that these guys had really embraced the competitive side of the game the right way. You know, it wasn't nasty or anything like that, but Graham sat there like, wow, I just beat Achilles. I might retire now.
And it's worth picking up, Marcus, on that competitive element, because normally for, you know, the majority of Warlord games, sort of endorsed events, they tend to be a bit more thematic, a bit more relaxed. World Open War was out and out, unabashed, you know, competitive international events. We have, you know, teams from America, South Africa, all over Europe, you know, the Danes, the Poles, Germany, Spain, etc. So it wasn't, you know, playing around three people on a team and let's have a fun weekend. It was let's have a fun weekend, but properly go for it in terms of the list, the level of competition, the quality of the players and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit of a misconception that we mostly support themed or we mostly support one or the other. We actually support any event that meets our criteria, and our criteria are really simple. There's got to be at least 8 players and it's got to be one of our game systems. And we will support and endorse and, you know, really love to see any spectrum of events, from completely thematic to, you know, beginner friendly, all the way up to we are the best players in the world. We are going to beat 7 bells out of each other on the tabletop and have a great time doing it. But no, you're right. This one is, you know, above and beyond what the majority of events would be in terms of its level of compete, in terms of the quality of player there, you know, in terms of the pure interpretation of rules, and your objective is you win. It was a really, really, really good way to see the most competitive, the very competitive edge of Bolt Action on show. And the reason I was so keen, one of the reasons, as I mentioned before, I was so keen to get on board with this, was because I knew that this event would showcase competitive Bolt Action in the right way, because, you know, all the people are great. The TOs and the refs, I mean, come on, Gary Betts takes no guff from anyone, is, you know, a top ref. Russ, an amazing TO. And the people there were going to play hard, they were going to play fair, and they were going to play sportsmanlike. And it would be down to skill and dice luck. And that's what we want to see in the top of Bolt Action competition.
Brilliant. So following on from obviously what was a very successful weekend, is there anything you do expect will change next year?
I think there's a few bits. Now, obviously, because this is very much Russ's event, you know, Russ runs the event as TO. We as Warlord come in and say, hey, we are putting our stamp on this. We say that we love it. We're presenting it in association. One of the things I'm very keen to do as tournament coordinator is let those TOs run their own event. Let them put their own stamp on things, because that's how we get a great diversity of events in the community. And so it's not to say, oh, I think this in the rules pack is going to change. I think, you know, what we're going to see next year is definitely from us at Warlord, we had a really good learning experience in how we covered this event. A really good kind of learning experience in the physical setup of the building. One of the things I'm actually planning to talk to Russ about is having a media availability section for captains and players. Nice, because one of the things I was really keen to do with this event was promote it as almost a sporting event. You know, it's very much, when you get to this level of Bolt Action, it is almost sports. It's, and we've seen the marketing that esports has had recently. We've seen that, you know, 40K and other games moving down those paths. And I actually thought, you know what? We have so many events where we talk about how great the tables are, how great the terrain is, how great the atmosphere is. Let's talk about the players, because if there weren't any players, we wouldn't have this event, just the same as if there were no TOs. And one of the things I was really keen to do was put the onus on the players of, hey, these guys are rock stars in the Bolt Action world. You know, these guys rule. Let's talk to them. Let's get their feedback. Let's get their feelings. So we did some really good interviews So during the event, you know, we had Matty Phipps from the German second team. He was great. We had Brian from the USA Swans. And of course, we had Bo sort of 30 seconds after his triumph talking about how they were going back to revise for the next one. So I think from Warlord, we'll definitely be looking to bring a more advanced setup for that, a more organized setup for that, so that we can do even more of those kind of that player focused kind of thing. One of the things I love with SSWG is the tables are stunning. They're so photogenic. You can put any army on there and they look great. So definitely, you know, we got loads of photos. Obviously, they've got their club photographer as well, who's fantastic. And in terms of change, I think just bringing more to put it more into the public eye, because we want people to see how cool this event is. And we want to show it off in the best light. As for obviously rules and things like that, that's very much a question for Russ.
It's official, Johnny. We are both rock stars of the bolt action world and international sportsmen. There we go. You heard it here first from Marcus. Fantastic. So, Marcus, looking ahead to what's coming up for Warlord Games, what should our listeners be thinking about for next year?
So, for next year, obviously, World Open Wars next iteration. Mm-hmm. It's literally a week since the first one, so naturally we don't have any confirmed dates yet, I don't think, but keep an eye out on the horizon for those. If you are someone that's looking to take part in a genuine international bolt action competition, you know, wherever you may be listening in the world, I'm certain you'll be welcome. For next year, of course, we also have the Bolt Action Grand Tournament in August, and that will be in Nottingham at BritCon. It is for me, the premier celebration of all things bolt action. It is where the community gets together. We play a bunch of games over a weekend. We have a great time in a great venue in the spiritual home of wargaming. And we all kind of look at each other at the end and go, God, our hobby's awesome, isn't it? So that is going to have a player pack reveal and launch in the next week. It may even be out by the time this goes live.
Fantastic.
So that will give you obviously full details. The tickets will be live. The player pack with the rules for army list construction will be live, so Bo and the Danes can get practicing. And obviously, then leading on from that, there will be a whole bunch of coverage of this last event, World Open War, building into the GT as we focus on sort of the competitive cycle moving forwards. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we've talked a lot about a couple of big events. What I really want to focus on is the small events in people's local area, the events put on by local communities, by wargamers, just like all of us, who just want to get together with some mates, have a good time, and dish out some prizes and see who's really got bragging rights down the pub afterwards. And we have our events website. It's play.warlordgames.com. And that is where we list all of the events for all of our game systems that we're supporting. So you can go on there, you can find an event in your local area, get in touch, get tickets booked, and you can know that this is an event that we've looked at and gone, yeah, we like this. Have some prizes, have some support. We love it. We want people to go. Additionally, we would love to hear, and we're always happy to hear from, tournament organizers all over the world. If you are running an event for Bolt Action, which of course is the game of ours that's most played in tournaments, but for any of our games, if you're running an event, please email info@warlordgames.com, because we want to support you. We want to shout about your events. We want to give you some awesome prizes to give to your players. And the only thing we ask in return is you send us loads of pictures of you having fun that we can put on our social media. So honestly, in terms of things to, you know, look forward to, yeah, there's the big milestones like the GT and World Open War, but there's also so many local events of all scales, of all shapes and sizes. You know, obviously here in the UK, we've got the Nationals and the Opens, and we've got all sorts of bigger and smaller events. So when you multiply that by the whole world, there's just an amazing amount of bolt action and other games being played. There's an awesome global community. So just check it out.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. Thanks, Marcus.
No problem at all. Just to chuck one back at you guys, actually, because obviously I was there as sort of a part-time ref and a part-time reporter, very much working. You guys were there as players playing. How did you find it? How was that for you?
It was my first proper international event for Bolt Action, and I absolutely loved it. I'm going to next year to the WTC as part of one of the England teams. So it's a great opportunity for me to you know, play some international players, get used to that team format at the same time. I had six great games, six great opponents from all over the world. And what I really enjoyed was the spirit in which the games were played in. Yes, they were hard. Yes, they were competitive. Yes, people were going at it, you know, hammer and tongs. But yeah, after every single game and during every single game, there was jokes, there was banter, there was laughs, etc. Even with people, you know, whose English isn't the first language, it was just a really, really chilled event whilst also being very, very serious and competitive, if it's possible to be both things at the same time.
Absolutely. And that would be my takeaway, was every game seemed like it was playing hard but fair, yeah, and in the spirit of Bolt Action. What about you, Johnny?
Yeah, it was a good one, wasn't it? I think, as Phil said, I think everyone had a fabulous time, which is the key thing. We're all there to have fun at the end of the day. Maybe it's not the Danes, but the rest of us are.
I mean, and the last, I think, question for me is obviously England came through in the end. You know, you qualified for the championship round. Johnny, as captain, what went wrong, mate?
What do you mean? I think we did better than anyone expected. So the question should be the other way around.
Where was the win, Johnny? After the rugby, we were all counting on you.
I think we'd already proved our point that we were big competitors, and so we could take the Sunday off and just have a nice time, focus on the fun rather than the competition. And that's what happened. We had the most fun, I imagine, of all the teams.
I mean, we jest, and you know, it's always a British tradition to rinse on our teams.
Of course.
But you know, I want to say, actually, congratulations to, you know, you lads and Team England for making that championship round. Mm-hmm. Because with the group stage format, with all of the teams we have present, that was seriously tough. There were some great teams that found themselves playing in Group 2 and Group 3. In the championship rounds on Sunday. So I suppose more of the same for you guys then. Keep it up.
Thank you very much, sir. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we weren't seeded. Yeah, Germany was the team that was seeded in our group, so we knew it was going to come down to that game. We won our first two rounds, and so went into the final round against Germany on day one, knowing that if we won that, we'd go into the winners' group. We promptly did win that. So we won all three rounds on day one, which put us in the final group with Denmark, Spain, Wales, and ourselves. So I think, yeah, as Johnny said, yeah, it didn't quite go to plan on day two. But to be fair, we didn't expect to be in that group on day two. So we were very pleased with how we did on day one. And I think we were competitive on day two, even if the results didn't go our way overall.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, looking at the score breakdown, I'm just playing with you because unfortunately that is an English tradition. But no, I think there's definitely something every nation that turned up can be proud of. I don't, you know, there were upsets, there were shocks, there were surprises, but there wasn't, you know, any bad, you know, there wasn't any bad times had. All of the nations played really well. All the nations are a credit to their Bolt Action scenes. Competitive Bolt Action is alive and well. And I think that's my big takeaway from the event.
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Marcus. It's been a real treat to have you on. Hopefully we'll hear from you again soon with some exciting news. But in the meantime, we'll just be on tenterhooks waiting for the information about next year's GT, I think.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me, folks. Always happy to come on and, you know, speak with players in the community, especially when we've just spent a weekend together and I wanted to get your thoughts on an event that we shared.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Cheers, Marcus. Thank you.
Back to the studio.
Thanks, Johnny. So, Johnny, you captained Team England. Do you want to talk us about your experience before the event in terms of how you came to be captain and also the event itself from your perspective?
Absolutely, yeah. So I've been going to events at SSWG, the Southend-on-Sea War Games Group, for quite a few years now. Russell's been running Three Good Men, as Marcus was talking about, for quite a while now. I actually don't know when the first one was, but every year I've been going to that with a team of three of us. It's very much a thematic tournament. And so it's very much who can build the most thematic force. That tends to be what is rewarded. There are prizes for sort of your first, second, third team. But generally, everyone's going there sort of to show off quirky or interesting forces. So I've taken Brandenburgers to that. And when I say Brandenburgers, I mean the sea lion ones where everyone's dressed as nuns or monks or...
Nuns on the run.
Exactly, yeah. And so it's always a lot of fun. And so because of that, when Russell was putting together his international tournament, he asked if I would help put together sort of an England team for the tournament. And so got together a motley crew, if you will, of the three of us, based on sort of previous tournament performance and also because we are going to WTC together. Mm-hmm. And so we had myself, Captain, yourself, obviously, as you're aware, you were there.
I was. Thank you, Johnny. Yeah.
And Alan, who was at WTC this year, he actually helped to sub in for the Dutch team, who were short a player. And so he's really, of the three of us, I think he was probably the most experienced international player, yeah. Wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's sort of the background to how I got involved in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So the format is quite a unique one with this one. It's sort of set up a bit like the World Cup, where the first day is like a qualifying round, where you have sort of, the teams are split into groups, and you have sort of your top seeded. So before the tournament, based on his experience and the experience of the other referees, because there was a whole team of referees,
yeah,
Russell had seeded all of the teams. And what he did was basically took the top four teams who you'd expect to be sort of the main contenders, and he split them across four groups, and then yep. He took the next four teams and split them across the four groups. And so basically each group was made up of sort of a top seed and then sort of three sort of lesser known quantities, I suppose you would say. And so because of that, we ended up in a group with the Germans, the Barbarians, who were a team made up of multiple nationalities, and the Spanish second team, the Germans very much being the favourite in our group.
Yeah, so in terms of the top seeds, you had Germany, Poland, Spain, and Denmark. So they were separated on day one. Russell then separated the home nations. So you had the two Welsh teams, ourselves and Scotland, in separate groups as well. Because being an event in the UK, obviously we get to know the Welsh players and the Scottish players, and Russell was keen that we didn't have to necessarily play against them on day one. Obviously, day two, depending on how people finished in terms of where they finished in the group, you may well end up having another home nation in your group on day two. But it was very crucial for day one. We were split across the different groups.
Exactly, yeah. So at the end of the first day, the winner of each group got to go into the championship group, where you're playing for the big trophy. And then second in each group got to play for the second trophy. And so every team had a trophy to fight for, basically, on the second day, which was an interesting format. It kind of made it feel like 2 one-day tournaments to an extent. It's very different to how the WTC run things, where they try to sort of aim for true Swiss. And I think both sort of have pros and cons, don't they?
Yeah, and obviously before the event itself, there was a lot of publicity on YouTube and Facebook, and Bo had featured it, and Russell had put out a video on behalf of the club explaining the situation. And I like the fact that irrespective of where you finished on day one, you still had something to play for on day two. So there were those four new groups created on day two. And then if you won the group on day two, you were going to win a trophy, whether or not you finished first, second, third, fourth on day one.
Yeah, and I think that's the big pro of that system. Equally, on the other hand, there were teams like the Germans who were narrowly knocked off the top spot. And sort of for them, I think they were quite disappointed that it meant that there was no shot at redemption. And I think that's the benefit of the Swiss system. But I did really like that. The big benefit for me was that it meant on the first day, you could very cleanly separate players who play each other all the time to guarantee that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you go through Swiss, one of the problems that can happen is you end up with the same teams sort of who should be facing off. And then you have a bit of sort of a dilemma. Do you break the Swiss system or do you make the teams play each other again? And so this group system really nicely handles that issue as well. So interestingly as well, this one was an 1,100 points, single generic platoon.
Yeah.
What did you think of that as a restriction, Phil? Would you have preferred double generic 1K, or were you quite happy with the quirkiness of it.
No, I like the quirkiness because it meant you had to think about your list rather than just taking off the shelf your 1,000-point single generic reinforced platoon, because it wasn't necessarily a case of just adding in another 100 points. So I did like that. Obviously, having the single generic platoon rather than dual meant you weren't going to be facing a massive amount of armored vehicles, but you still could get quite a few in. You know, you obviously can get, you know, your tank and your armored car, plus any transport. So it wasn't like you were facing effectively armored platoons. Certainly for me, I faced a variety of lists and a variety of nations. Not all members of our team did. But certainly for me, I did have variety over the six games.
Yeah. And I think, so Alan raised a really interesting point when talking about this, because I think you're right. The 1,100 points is a great way to sort of force people out of their comfort zone a little bit without sort of making them really uncomfortable. Mm. Because you've just given people an extra 100 points to spend. Go have fun. But it means they're not going to be as efficient. These players who've spent years refining a list, suddenly they might not be as efficient at that point limit. But I think, as I say, Alan raised a good point, which he felt that a lot of the minor nations especially really shine in dual platoon.
Yeah, true.
And they lose that shine a bit with the single platoon. And we really, as much as sort of like individual players faced a nice variety, if you looked across the whole tournament, really it was very much sort of British, Germans, Soviets, Japanese, and then a few US, and there were very few minor nations represented.
Yeah, there was no French, no Italians. You didn't see any Bulgarians, which Alan plays competitively. It was very much those five core armies. It is worth noting as well, as a team event, there was obviously three in the team, and you couldn't duplicate nations. So you could only have one British, one Japanese, one German list in your list. So it wasn't like you were playing against, you know, only British, Soviet and German, or British, Soviet and Japanese. There was a bit of variety, but it was basically across those five nations.
I was thinking about when I was driving home, I was like, we don't like the Stuarts and stuff. And a lot of the tables really punish people who didn't bring a Stuart because
they were open. Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff like the, that table with all the barbed wire, and infantry can't cross it. You need to drive a tank through it first. If you didn't, basically the ideal thing to bring is a Stuart, because you get all the benefits of a Stuart plus the additional benefits that they've created for you. And I do think that that's something that should be considered for the terrain. Like, don't build tables that make Stuarts even more beneficial, because that's one of the things I found with the, and I think I've said this to you already, but the Dodge carrier with the light anti tank gun that I take, sort of as my, I'm not going to take a Stuart option.
Out of principle.
Out of principle, yeah. What I found with that over the weekend, I found myself missing a Stuart, but not because of like all the machine guns and the DACA. I just found myself missing a Stuart because of the tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I don't think there is a US version of a light anti-tank gun on a tracked vehicle or half track, I found myself thinking, I wish I'd brought a Stuart, just so I didn't have to worry about which table I was on, because I would be able to knock over walls and stuff and actually allow my infantry to move around. And I think, so subjectively, obviously, people have preferences on terrain, but I think objectively, those tables were beneficial to the Gurkha Stuart build, which is why even the not British lists were effectively Gurkha Stuart builds, because you need to fight in the middle, because three of the missions were fighting in the middle, and you needed something tracked. And so, like, even the journalists were like fanatic pioneers, let's say, with Panzer III.
Yeah.
A lot of the lists were just like that, weren't they?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Or, you know, Soviets with veterans with Tough Fighter, for example.
Yeah. Basically, other than the Japanese, who would often sort of foot slog, all of the other competitive armies were just a Stuart and then veterans.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it also, in the lower groups, I imagine. So, actually, let's briefly talk about how we did, so that I can talk about my next point. So, on the first day, we actually finished top of our group. So, big up Phil and Alan, who carried me through. And what that meant was we were in the championship playing for the sort of the top prize on the second day. Mm-hmm. And obviously, because of that, I think that also sort of, that meant that we all were playing the very competitive teams who obviously were taking the most competitive choices, mm-hmm. which were unfortunately going to be the same three armies effectively for every nation, for every team. And whereas I imagine the lower leagues, I know there were some Hungarians in the lower leagues,
mm-hmm.
and I imagine each team was probably a slightly different composition in the other groups.
Mm. So one of the big features of the Southend Club is that they have their own dedicated space and they can leave the table set up permanently. They're not hiring a hall, for example, and they've got a massive amount of terrain and it looks amazing. The tables looked absolutely stunning, didn't they?
Yeah, there's a lot of very good terrain that they've got on hand there. I know there's a lot of very keen modelers who are part of that club who mm-hmm. sort of spend a lot of time and energy sort of putting all the work into those tables to make them look as good as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I thought occasionally it is at the detriment of play. Obviously, that's an opinion based on sort of like what your priority is. Mm-hmm. For a lot of players, the priority is they want a beautiful game, something that looks amazing, where you can take amazing photographs. For myself, I like a very clean game, mm-hmm. especially if... So, as I say, I've been doing Three Good Men for quite a long time, and there... It's not as big of an issue if sort of the edge of a wood is a bit muddy and you sort of come to a sort of a loose agreement and, oh, I thought they were in the wood. Do you think they're not in the wood? Oh, never mind, then they're not in the wood, then that's fine. But when we're doing a very competitive tournament, I really do like a very clean game and very clear terrain. And there are tables there where the sort of the aesthetics were sort of at the detriment to play, I would say. And again, we had a similar issue in terms of just sort of the function of the table. There were a few tables there where I thought that there's armies that can't win on this table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had that with one of the jungle tables, didn't we? Where we looked at each other and we said, this is an Allen table.
Yeah. So day two, the table, this was against the Spanish first team. And there was, because of the placement of barbed wire, for example, it effectively limited armies that didn't have tracked vehicles to essentially breaking through the barbed wire in only one area. So this was very much the case of, Alan, you're playing on this table because neither you were. I mean, I had a Stuart, mm-hmm. you know, but obviously you've got your dodges all over the place. So it definitely wasn't going to be a table for you because your wheeled vehicles were only going to be coming through one point. And for me, I was looking at it going, I just don't want to funnel my entire army through this one point. So yeah, I think that is fair that the tables looked amazing. On the whole, they played really well. Every now and then, little things, and it is a beef, and we talked about this in one of the earlier episodes on terrain, not clearly, you know, delineating between where the ruins are or where the woods and dense terrain finishes and the open ground starts. So you had to talk it through as captains, you know, you and the captain of the nation we were playing at that point, you talked it through before the round started. And then during the game itself, I absolutely was talking to my opponent, just clarifying as we went through, okay, that is the edge of the woods. That is the edge of the ruin. Before I made my decision as to what I was going to be doing with my order dice at that particular moment.
Yeah. And there was a really well-intentioned FAQ put together for the tournament, sort of trying to make rules clarifications. And there was a similar thing with the terrain. Sort of each table had a sheet to explain how the referees wanted you to play the terrain.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think in both instances, it was often used not to clarify, but to change the rules. And it was a bit like, occasionally it felt like playing chess where someone's just added an extra square in each direction. And obviously that changes the game in ways that we haven't really predicted. And as it's supposed to be a very like for fun, no problem at all.
Yeah,
you change
yeah.
the rules whenever you want. Let's have some fun. But if you're sort of like pushing the sort of the tournament, let's see who is sort of the best player of bolt action. You really have to make sure that we are in fact playing bolt action and not a derivative of it. And so there were things like sort of 3D elements were taken into account. And that was a little bit problematic because they're saying sort of it's true line of sight,
mm-hmm.
absolutely true line of sight. If you can see it, you can shoot it. And then so the question in the captain's chat was, well, what about dense terrain? Can I see through dense terrain? No, you can't see through dense terrain. But equally, dense terrain isn't infinitely tall.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was, well, what if I've got a ruin where it's sort of on one side it's really tall and then on the other side sort of the walls collapsed and then it's lower than a man? Is that still dense terrain or where's the edge of that dense terrain? And that was one of those situations where sort of the intention was good,
mm-hmm.
but by changing the rules, you've made it very muddy.
It's a really good point about the 3D element of the tables, but and we talked about this again in a previous episode. Quite often with bolt action, most of your tables, or certainly, you know, a significant proportion of them, are effectively 2D. You very rarely get elevation. Whereas over this weekend, there were some, you know, really big hills, really big valleys, all that sort of thing, and it did make me think, you know, in terms of, okay, true line of sight. What can I see? Is my unit, you know, sticking above the edge of a sand dune and all that kind of thing? So it did change, like you said earlier, it did change the way the game was played, which was fine once I got into it. I think my first game particularly, I was still a bit like finding my way in terms of how am I playing the table and the terrain, because it's not what I'm used to at UK events and down the club, etc., because it was slightly different from what the rule book says.
Yeah, and I don't mind you clarifying things, but changing the rules, I think you have to be very, very strict on your changes. And a lot of it was quite loose. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that sort of came up quite a lot in the captain's chat, where there'd be a rule change and I would ask for clarification on it. And a lot of the feedback would be, well, it's really obvious. We'll just sort of agree with the opponents.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't really work at a competitive tournament. We really need to have everything sort of in black and white, very clear, especially when you have international players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is a good point in terms of the language element. It was very clear in the pack that the game is played in English. It was being held in England. English was the language that people were going to be using, and certainly for me, it wasn't an issue on the whole. A couple of my opponents, English wasn't as strong as maybe some of my other opponents were, but generally speaking, we were okay. We got through it. But if you are changing things with regards to, you know, rules as written or rules as kind of written, and then you're throwing in the fact that, you know, some of the players don't have English as their first or second language, it then is adding another level of complexity. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think these type of tournaments should always be as close to rules as written as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only time TOs should dabble, if it's supposed to be sort of the very top tier competitive, the only sort of meddling that should be happening would be where the rule absolutely isn't clear. If the rule is clear, it shouldn't be changed. Mm-hmm. So one of the ones that sort of I wasn't particularly impressed with was the how you dismount from a vehicle when it's charged, because that was really nicely clarified in the Warlord FAQ recently, to say that basically it's an emergency disembark. You put them D6 from the truck, and it even explained sort of how, when you count as being in cover, what additional units on the truck do. Now, there was a really well-intentioned amendment in the World Open War pack where basically when you charge a truck, the guys get out to defend the truck, and so they stand between the unit charging and the truck.
Mm-hmm.
But then they hadn't added all the other stuff from the FAQ in terms of, like, is it simultaneous? Where do the other squads go? And that was never really clarified, which meant that really you were at the mercy of whichever referee happened to be at your table at the time.
Mm.
If it's not in black and white, are we following, are the other squads on board also going to stand between the truck and the squad charging, or are they getting out D6?
Mm.
And if that's not in black and white, then that's very much, and when you're at these sort of competitive tournaments, players will be sort of pushing for it to be played in the way that's advantageous to them.
Sure.
And that's not to say they're sort of like trying to cheat or anything, but
no.
Any ambiguity in the rules, you're always going to want it in your favor, aren't you?
Yeah.
If it's competitive like this.
What I will say is you experienced this more than we did, in the sense that because you obviously were the captain, these conversations were going on before the event itself in the captain's chat. For Alan and myself, we were basically like, well, just tell us what we're playing and we'll get on with it. We didn't have to worry about, you know, the back and forth and the is it this, is it that. It was like, all right, Johnny, what's the latest update? Fantastic. Right. Okay. I might need to change my expectation based on how I previously have been playing it, but now I know I can take that into the games itself.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point, isn't it? We just need to know what we're playing, what the rules currently are, what they will be, and then it's nice and clean. And I think one of the reasons they weren't too worried about this is because, of course, it's sort of like an edge case. It's very rare that someone will be charging a truck with two or three units in.
Yeah.
But it will happen once over the weekend. And if it happens twice, you want it to be ruled the exact same way both times.
Sure. So in terms of the teams, we had 16 teams, so 48 players overall. And the teams came from all over the world. So we had two teams from America. We had the guys from the Snafu podcast and another team, the USA Swans. We had a South African team. We had two teams from Germany, two teams from Denmark. We had the Barbarians, who were obviously a multinational team in the true Barbarian spirit, wearing the black and white striped T-shirts for those rugby fans out there. So, yeah, a really, really good international mix and some absolutely top quality players. You know, these are players who are regularly playing, you know, at the WTC, regularly playing at the national events, you know, in Europe and you know, going to other countries' national events as well. So it was a absolutely first-class, top-draw event in terms of teams, representation of different teams and the players themselves.
Yeah, there was a great selection of players. Mm-hmm. I ended up playing quite a few of the locals. Mm-hmm. so when we played the Barbarians, I played Martin.
Yeah.
And as much as sort of people say, and we've probably said as well, that when you go to sort of a world team championship or an international team championship, you want to be playing all these players you don't get to see. Mm-hmm. I actually thoroughly enjoyed the game against sort of the regular faces that I've played many times this year already.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was nice just to sort of catch up. Whereas sort of the international games, quite often, especially sort of if we don't have sort of a common language that we're both really confident in, mm-hmm. sort of the game becomes very sort of focused on the game, and there's not much sort of there's not really the time or sort of the communication ability for you to have like conversations alongside the game. I'd really enjoyed playing Martin and Paul, mm-hmm. and from the internationals, yeah, the Spanish, I enjoyed playing the Spanish both times we played them. But the A and B team, mm-hmm. and he also played the Danes. I got to play Bo Mortensen. That was a good game.
Of course.
And in that one, what we said was, because what we were saying earlier, where each table had a little terrain table of, this is how this piece of terrain should be played. Bo and I just sort of looked at each other and said, should we just play it by the rule book instead? So sorry, Russell, we didn't follow your instructions there.
And you also played Germany as well, didn't we?
Which, that at the end of day one, that was a tense old game, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So we were obviously in the group with the Germans. They were the seeded team. We were the absolute unknown quantity. Bo had done his usual, you know, list reviews in the lead up to the event. And he's rated the, you know, our list, the English list, really highly. But then with the caveat of, but we don't quite know who the players are. So that was, you know, that was interesting going into it. And we played the Germans in the final round of day one, knowing that if we beat the Germans, we would qualify for the winners group. And we did. So we won all three rounds on the Saturday, going into the winners group on the Sunday.
Yeah, and that was a close victory for us against the German team. It was timely objectives, and I think Alan lost his game against Manuel, who I think was the best player at WTC last year, by quite a close game. I think Alan said he lost, between them, they'd lost about 140 models over the course of the battle, because it was timely objectives, and so you just had a Japanese horde meeting a Japanese horde in the middle of the table.
Yeah, yeah.
And Manuel had come out on top. I think they ended up with about 15 models left each. Then you'd done quite a comfortable victory, I believe. And then in my game, I just clinched it by sort of 1 point. And equally, I think in Alan's game, he just lost by 1 point. So it really could have gone.
Yeah.
It could have swung. Other than your result, the other two could have swung either way. And so, but they were very graceful in their defeat. Obviously, they were very disappointed that they hadn't made the championship group. Mm-hmm. But Manuel was ever the gentleman. And I think he shook all of our hands, didn't he?
Absolutely. Congratulated us. Yeah, no, 100%. He did, and wished us well for day two. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he must have cursed us, though. Because it didn't go as well the second day, did it?
No, so we went into day two. So the Danes and the Spanish first team qualified from their group. And Wales, who were second seed in their group, they managed to beat Poland on day one. So the Welsh team, led by Paul Wickens, were also in the group. So that was the setup for the final day.
Yeah, and then we managed to hold the Welsh to a draw, didn't we? After that result, what was really funny is Paul said to me, well, we've basically guaranteed that we're probably not going to win now, because when you're only playing three games, you're expecting that someone will win all three. So we held the Welsh to a draw.
Yeah, so we had one loss, one draw, one win across the three games. So yep. That was a draw overall in the round.
And then we comfortably lost to the Spanish.
We very comfortably lost to the Spanish, yeah.
And then we comfortably also lost to the Danish team.
So having said that, so having lost against Spain in round two, mathematically we couldn't finish first. So it could have been Spain, Wales, or Denmark winning that group, depending on round three. But we were still in for a chance to finish second, depending on how we did against Denmark.
Yeah, and we didn't do great. And so...
we've had better days.
Yeah, and so we very kindly gave Denmark a big win, which meant that overall they came out on top of our group and on top overall, winning the big prize and being the World Open War Champions 2023. Yeah. So huge congratulations to the Danish team.
Yeah, well done. Well done, Bo. Well done, Mike. Well done, Mark. Fantastic achievement. And yeah, great game. I played Mike in it. Absolutely brilliant game. Really, really loved it.
Yeah, I had a great game against Bo as well. Really good game where I took a gamble, as I always do, and it didn't pay off.
Johnny Curran, win big or go home.
Exactly that. I mean, from the very get-go, I think our philosophy was always just to sort of maximize the fun, wasn't it? And
yeah, yeah.
I think we were not as prepared as some of the other teams. I know some of the other captains in that top group were bringing binders with many, many pages.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we definitely prepared for day one. You know, we went through the list that we knew we were facing on day one. We did work out our preferred pairings. Obviously, there was an element of we couldn't control all of the matchups because the opposition captain obviously had a say in it as well. Because we weren't expecting to win our group, we maybe hadn't looked at, you know, the Spanish first team lists or the Danish team list because we weren't expecting to be playing them on day two. So I think, yeah, we weren't unprepared. We just weren't as prepared as others might have been.
Yeah, I mean, we were prepared in that we know how to play the game.
Yeah.
We've played quite a lot of tournaments, but for me, the sort of the primary objective was that everyone enjoyed every game.
Yeah.
And because having played quite a few times at Southend, one of the things that I have experienced is you end up on a table where you can't win because of the terrain issues, mm-hmm. or you end up playing an opponent who you can't necessarily beat. So I took my classic flamethrower horde
yeah.
and with my five flamethrowers, and that's sort of my killing blow. And so I had to dodge Japanese players left, right, and center basically
yeah, yeah.
because I had no chance in that. And equally, sort of, and so the aim with every pairing was to avoid a matchup that meant someone couldn't win.
Yeah.
And I think we succeeded in that.
I'd say so, yeah. I mean, certainly thinking about my six games, I didn't go into those games thinking I can't win based on the list I was playing against. Yeah, the player adds another level to it. But in terms of the list, I absolutely was looking at them going, I could win this. It just depends on how it goes and the skill level of myself and the opponent and so on.
Yeah, it did unfortunately mean that I played exclusively Brits all weekend.
You did.
So the way the pairing works is, so every round there's three different tables for the team to play on. One captain puts down one army on the table they think they want that army to play on. And then the opposing captain chooses an opponent for that player.
Yeah.
And then you swap roles where Captain B then puts down an army on a table. And so what it meant was basically any time we came up against a team that had Japanese, mm-hmm. I couldn't put myself down first
no.
because they would just put Japanese against me knowing that I can't hurt them because of the fanatics. And so you were put down every game because we knew that
yep.
with the Gurkhas, you can take basically every force on. If someone puts a barbecue against you, you've got it.
Yeah,
if someone
yeah.
puts a Japanese horde against you, you've got it. And so you were always sort of the thrown under the bus mm-hmm. player. But then what it meant was basically I'd then end up with the other pairings. They then wouldn't put their Japanese against you and they would reserve their Japanese and their Brits and then put the Brits against me.
Yeah, yeah. And then Alan...
Effectively, I'd be left with no choice but to choose the Brits.
And Alan played a lot of mirror matches in terms of other Japanese lists, yeah.
Yeah. And I think he was quite happy with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He fancied his chances against other Japanese because he'd taken a bit of a quirky one, hadn't he, with the cavalry sans horses.
Yeah, the cavalry that left the horses behind, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think he was quite happy with that outcome.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, six great games, and I played a good variety of different nations and different builds. The first game against the Spanish B team was a US list, which actually, that was the one list I said to you for round one, I don't want to play, because it had a huge amount of DACA, not just in terms of the Stuart, but also it was big, chunky squads of Marines with BARs. And I was running, you know, seven-man Gurkha Paras. And they can get cut down, obviously, if you're putting in, you know, a lot of shots against them. So First list, yeah, was a US stacker list. The second list was a Soviet flamethrower spam. Engineers, the BA-20, the OT 34 tank with the flamethrower. Third list, the German list, was more flamethrowers, lots of Stern Pioneers. Next day against Chris from Wales, again, more flamethrowers. The fifth game against Achilles from Spain, that was a weird list, but he plays it so well. You know, he had the Shirkers, he had the new Eben Amal, Fortune Jaeger Pioneer team. There was a lot of DACA in that list, which wasn't something I was looking forward to. And then the final game against Mike from Denmark was hilarious. He had basically forward deploying spam, it was scout squads and tank hunters, to the point where deployment in sectors, he didn't put a single unit down in his sector because the wording of the mission had changed. Yeah. So normally in sectors, you have to deploy, I think it's up, you have to deploy a minimum half, isn't it, of your army, and the rest go in reserve. That first clause had been removed. So you could potentially reserve your entire force. So what Mike quite rightly did was he deployed all of his forward deployers, everything else went in reserve, and nothing went in his sector. So I had like seven or eight squads, in the neutral zone opposite my sector from deployment from the word go. So really interesting list, and it worked really well for him.
Yeah. On the missions, three of the missions were rulebook missions, and three of them were sort of the custom missions from other sources. So, for example, we played Timely Objectives, which is one of the ones that the Snafu guys wrote. I think Jeff wrote that one, which is interesting because he was there at the tournament. Yeah. And I know that it wasn't in the original version that he wrote it in. So I would have been quite interested to see what he thought. But the three that we played that weren't rulebook missions, I really wasn't a huge fan of, because all three of them had that element where the objective, at least one objective, is placed exactly on the center line. Yeah. And I really dislike that for two reasons, really. Because first of all, you're forcing players to fight in the middle of the table, which means you take away quite a bit of the agency, and you're really promoting the armies that can take a punch, like your Gurkha paratroops that you're going to get anyway.
Mm.
And then also the other problem is it tells you exactly where the center of the table is.
Yeah.
And the same with the secondary. If the secondary goes bang in the middle, you know exactly where the center of the table is, which helps you to sort of, in a game with no pre-measure, it helps you to gauge a lot of things, knowing exactly where the middle of the table is.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so I think that is one to consider for next year. I think which missions are played.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been quite happy with just going rulebook exclusively, but I can understand why you want to throw in extra ones, especially when really there isn't a brilliant sixth choice from the rulebook, is there?
I was going to say, like, there are five rulebook missions I am more than happy to play, and there is not a sixth mission that I want to play in a tournament. And we talked about this when we looked through the missions in one of the very first episodes, because if somebody asked me to play Demolition, for example, or Top Secret at an international competitive event, I'm not going to be best pleased about it.
Yeah, exactly. Any other closing thoughts, Phil, on the tournament? Did you have a wonderful time?
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. Said six great games. It was, even though we played Wales, I played Chris, who I haven't played before. So all six of my opponents were new to me. A lot of them will be in Granada next year, so it would be great to catch up with them, maybe play against them, or at the very least see them when we're there for WTC. And I look forward to seeing what happens next year, depending on who's captain and who he selects.
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant weekend. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The players were brilliant. I don't think I recall a single instance of anyone being of any trouble, shall we say. We'll use trouble as a generic term for the kind of things that we don't like to see at tournaments, like underhanded play and things. I don't recall a single instance of that, or anyone being upset about anything in particular, other than maybe he's Ball was a bit agitated at the end of the first day when he thought there was a very strong possibility that he hadn't made it through the championship group. And Denmark luckily got through on points difference, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
And I think that was the sort of the only moment, I think, when people didn't seem to be having as good a time as you'd expect at a tournament. Just because they were so concerned, obviously.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think everyone had a wonderful time, and I would recommend it. And for anyone who is interested in getting involved, if you contact us, we'll get you in touch with Russell, or you can contact Russell directly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are looking to put on the same tournament, the same standard next year. So it'll be a really good one. And I imagine if you're from a nation that wasn't represented, they'd be very keen to get you on board.
Yeah, so Russell put out a YouTube video in advance of World Open War via his club. And he did say in there that the intention is to expand the numbers for next year. So I absolutely would expect that he would love to see some more nations being represented, or, you know, a second team from some of the nations who only brought one team this year.
Yeah, I think the more the merrier is the motto.
Yeah.
So huge congratulations to Denmark for winning the tournament, and a huge thank you to Russell for running the tournament. I know that it was a lot of work, and it was a really impressive feat to get so many teams from all over the world together in one place for a bolt action bash. Obviously, we didn't go into depth with the list reviews there. If you do want to see all of the lists in depth, you should check out Bo Mortensen's YouTube channel, because he did list analysis for every single army that was represented at the tournament. Equally, if you wanted to hear about the tournament from an international perspective, I imagine the Snafu podcast team will be covering it in their next episode. So tune in to that if you want to hear someone else's opinion. So that was World Open War. Everyone had a wonderful time. Would recommend. Briefly, I think we'll talk about the final tournament for us of the calendar year, which will be Warfare.
That's right. So just under 3 weeks away by the time this episode gets released, will be Warfare in Farnborough, which is a two-day 1,000-point event. And it's dual generic platoon or single theatre platoons.
Indeed, yeah. And the nice thing with Warfare is it's limited to 14 dice. And so you get some really unique builds because of that. And every year you get the sort of a lot of the same regulars turning up because they enjoy it so much. Alongside sort of some new faces, bring some fresh ideas, some fresh armies.
Yeah.
And because you can have those theatres, you do get to see some really nice, weird and wacky ones, don't you?
Yeah. And I will say, you know, having done the list checking for Warfare, even though it is, you know, a lot of the regular faces, they are bringing different nations and or different armies, but the same nation. So you're not just seeing the same faces with the same army that you might have seen at the Welsh Nationals, for example, or at WoW and so on. So there is quite a bit of variety going on.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about Warfare and the English and Welsh Open and those type of tournaments, where I think a lot of the competitive players see it as sort of a bit of a palate cleanser
from all
the competitive play, and they'll bring something weird and wacky and potentially even sort of ridiculously tame to the point where they're going to really struggle to win a single game.
That's my excuse. I just want to say I'm getting my excusing early.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so it is a nice one for that. Brilliant. All right. Well, for anyone who is listening who will be coming to Warfare, we look forward to seeing you there. For anyone listening who is going to the World Team Championship, we will see you there. To anyone going to any other tournaments, hopefully we'll see you there. Thanks for listening.
Please continue to like, share, subscribe, and if you're enjoying the pod, why not leave us a review?
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.